The location.
Oh, yeah.
And in saying that, Mark, I know that Stana recently interviewed you for her newsletter, and she talked
about
the filming of For Lovers Only and how it took about 3 weeks, and you guys had a low budget, and you had about a cast of five, and you didn't really scout for location filming. You just went across France, and at one time she even tweeted that you guys were going to be filming in Italy and Spain, but that didn't work out. In saying so, do you have to have permission to just stop in the middle of somewhere and get permits? I mean, how do you go about that, getting people as background and hiring the background when you're traveling across France?
No, we didn't pull any permits. What we did was when we started this journey, and the film we wanted to do was we wanted to do absolutely nothing that we had done before, which pull permits, get a large production, get a large crew. We wanted to remove all that. My background, as well as Donna's background,
right,
and Mike's background, is coming from very controlled environments. Her TV show is very controlled. The films that we did previous, we were very controlled, and we wanted to remove all those straitjackets and all those things that kind of hold you down, and be able to go, hey, we're going to go into this church, and if we feel that we can do this scene here, we're going to do this scene. And the equipment that we used, and the direction of Michael, we were allowed to really explore that freedom. We didn't do very much location scouting. We knew where we were going to go, but we didn't know exactly to what point. So we'd go into like a church, and they're very well lit with the stained glass, so we'd pretty much find the light, do the scene in front of the light, go to a hotel room that we'd pick a hotel room either when she was staying in or when I would stay in, and then the next morning use that as one of the sets. It's half we knew, half knowledge of what we were going to do, half knowledge of what we weren't going to do. It was an amazing amount of freedom in that.
So the crowd control, how was that? Did people just not pay attention to what was going on? A little bit of curiosity
Well, we kind of went during into France when it was just about to start the tourist season. It was just late spring, and people were just starting to come in. Funny enough, when they would see that camera, it's a small 35 millimeter camera. I did tweet what it looks like. It's very, very small. People would step out of the way. They would not cross the line, and they would allow us to do whatever we needed to do. What was really great about it is that if anybody came up and kind of figured that Mike was taking a longer time doing the stills that they thought he should, he would say, "They're getting married soon, and I'm the wedding photographer," and they would all like kind of gush and walk away. So it was great. So that
That's really
we were doing things. We were in places that you would believe in churches and very beautiful areas that you would think that this couple is doing wedding videos or wedding portraits. And that's
on their honeymoon.
Well, on honeymoon.
Well, in the beginning of the film, when Eve and Sophie are on the stairs and they see each other for the first time in 8 years, and she starts messing with her wedding ring, and later she's interviewing someone and she's twisting and turning the ring and she's playing with it. Is she already thinking of what she wants to happen with Eve, or is she thinking of David and their unhappy marriage?
I think she's in a car crash. I think at that point she doesn't know what she's going to do. I think she's upside down, and her car's upside down. The wheels are turning, the airbags have been deployed, and she's just hanging on for dear life at that point, and I think both of them are. I think he physically looks like, on that match cut scene with him, that it looks like he was in an accident.
He plays with his wedding ring too, and then he calls Sophia. And so is that symbolic, the rings, that they're wanting each other, but they're cutting themselves off from their spouses then and there?
Yeah. I think at that point, it's their shackle, in the sense that, if I remove this small little ring, is there a freedom there? Do I get out of jail card? Is that the key to get out of where I'm at? Is this what's stopping me? Is this ring stopping me from doing what I need to do? It's very symbolic in that sense, that a ring is about the only thing that stops people.
Well, and then they're by the water, after they've had their dinner.
Yeah.
And then we know that he kisses her and kind of pushes for that connection.
Yeah.
And then we cut to her lying in bed crying. And then he's in the cab, and they're both devastated, but they're happy, kind of. But we know clearly they've had, they've made love. And Sophia is thinking of David and Eve's of his wife. So they've just crossed the line of infidelity. Does Is that what you wanted to come across there that early in the film, or did you want that to come a little bit later? But that's the way I took it. I wasn't quite sure if they had made love then or they just stopped
kissing. No, they didn't. They didn't make love at that point. I mean, the kiss is something that is you know, consummating kind of what they're feeling at that point. You know, they definitely want to be together. But I think they're both hesitant at that still. It's like we know who we are to each other. We know how important we are to each other. I think they're very, very confused at that point. I mean, they're very, very confused people. They both don't look as good as they do in the rest of the film. I mean, he looks tired. She looks a little bit you know, not as pretty as she does throughout the film. I mean, I don't want to say anything. She's not gorgeous, but at that point, they both look, you know, that they're both at the end of the rope at that point, you know.
Now,
hey Pam, real quick, I have a whole bunch of people. Susan know. Thank you for calling in. Did you have anything else to say?
Nope, just thank you so much for the movie. I've enjoyed it very much.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Susan.
Awesome.
Okay, next up we have Shelley, who's Tappan fan on Twitter, and she's from Florida. Here's Shelley.
Hey, Shelley.
Hey.
I'm making sure I can be heard because I always have this problem.
I can hear you, clearly.
I just have to say I absolutely love the film and I love the music just as much because as being a dancer and a musician, I have a particular love for anything that's so great.
Thank you very much.
And what you said before about bringing a sort of humanity to the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz.
Funny, right?
I really respect that recognition that there's two sides in every situation and even in For Lovers Only there's, you know, that constant battle back and forth between who's right and wrong and what's good and what's not and everything and who's telling the truth and who's lying. I love it.
Yes. And, I mean, it's important as a storyteller to understand that there's both sides, and that's hard to explore in a movie. It's very, very difficult to walk that line. And I know there's a lot of detractors from this movie, and it's not everyone's cup of tea because of the infidelity. And so you know, that was the struggle with the screenplay, and that was the struggle with revealing the information throughout the movie, that when we're going to release this information, at what point are you going to accept it? And that was a big thing.
It was so well done to know, like, that there's not, it's not just that, oh, you're wrong. There is a backstory and a reasoning behind why people do what they do.
Yes.
And in thinking about some sort of, like, a book, like Wicked, is where, you know, it shows the Wicked Witch of the West side of the story and the backstory and the history and everything. I have to wonder if you had the chance to do something similar like that with a villain or even... like a criminal in everyday life, like to humanize or justify, like, what would you do with that? Or like, who would you pick?
Oh, you know, it's tough. I'd read the Columbine book by the guy who'd written the definitive book about the boys. And I thought he really focused in on the parents of the kids that did the shootings. And I thought that was such an amazing look. I think there had been a film that explored that as well. I don't know the title of it. And I thought, wow, this, you know, at the end of the day, they are vilified for just being the parents. And I thought, what an interesting story that is. That they are. How do you deal with that? I mean, like, how as a parent do you deal with your kid murdering other children and it coming back on that day after and you being the villain, where basically, you know, in the old days, you would have marched them out and stoned them. And I thought that was interesting. Take on the actions of being a parent and having your kid do something so vile, and how do you deal with that? Not necessarily being your fault.
Before I go, you guys did such a fantastic job of just showing the different perspectives and every side, and even people who aren't the principal cast, you can tell how they feel about the situation and what's going on. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Did I just go off on a tangent?
No.
Shelley, thank you for calling in very much. It's good to hear from you again. Do you have anything else to ask Mark before we get on down the... We have so many people and so many questions.
I'll let somebody else ask their question.
Okay, well, thanks
very much
for calling.
For yep.
Now, Mark, I just wanted to ask you, we want, since this is Stana Talk Radio,
yes, of course.
We wanted to ask you some stuff about Stana.
Of course.
If Stana hadn't been available to play Sophia, what actresses did you have in mind for the part?
We didn't have any. Let me walk you through the process of how this. This film came about, and we wanted to do it, and we wanted to do it immediately. We were going to go in between another project. And so we had the script in. Within our agency, we shared a couple of the agents that are on her team and on my team, and I asked my agent, I said, look, we're going to be casting this role. She's very familiar with our work. My agent's actually a big fan of ours as well. So she said, look, I know I'm going to put a list together. I'm going to put them from the actresses I think will do it to the ones that I don't think they may do it. I don't know. But I know the people. I know a few that would do this. Stana's name was on the top. And I wasn't very familiar with what she is. I'd kind of seen Castle here and there. I didn't really focus in on her character as much. Michael knew her. Michael knew who she was, and he said, "Oh, she's very interesting." So, she came in for a meeting. She was the first meeting we'd had, and a couple of there was another actress that came in, but she was unknown. And you were immediately struck by her bravery and her vulnerability at the same time. She displayed this kind of what do you need done? This is the type of movie I want to do. I want to do it now. Are we going to ride motorcycles? Are we going to jump off cliffs? Let's do it. And then immediately, right after the meeting, I looked at Mike and I said, you know, that's the girl. I think that's the girl. I'd given her my email right after the meeting, which you usually don't do, but she said, can I have your email? I said, sure. So I gave it to her. She'd written an email, I mean, within seconds saying, let's do this. I want to get this thing going.
Give me those rolls.
I was struck by it because what we were requiring and what we talked about in the meeting was, you know, was a very stripped down idea of what a movie is. You know, it's me and Mike and her. Basically, at that time, we didn't have anybody else that was going to do makeup or any other kind of crew, which we never had to begin with. But to have somebody be so enthusiastic about that process and understand that process and understand the movies we were referring to. And she was a really, really big fan of North Fork. So she knew visually what the playground she was going to play in. So the gut-wrenching thing came was an email from our agent saying she wasn't available. She was and then she wasn't. They added two more episodes of Castle. So at that point, we had to make the decision, are we going to wait or if we're not? And we kind of toyed with it, and it just her impression was so strong that we ended up waiting for her. And actually, Mike went ahead of us, and then me and Stana flew together. She was released from the show, and then within 24 hours, we were on a plane to Paris.
Right. Oh. Well, how would you describe Stana
as an actress
and a person?
I haven't spent that much time with her outside of acting, a few dinners and stuff. So, I mean, she's very, very passionate. I love her to death in the sense of what she gave to me as an artist and she did for the film. I don't know if there's a separation as much as maybe the Beckett character is to Sophia. She's very close to Sophia in the sense of how passionate she is and how vulnerable and sensitive she is as a person. We got along amazingly. Obviously, we did in the movie. You can see how we interact with one another. She's just a tremendous artist. I mean, it was such a delight to work with her. We still keep in contact, and we talk quite a bit, but not as much as we would probably like, because we're both very busy.
So she describes herself as a method actress. So did she fit the role of Sophia in the way that you thought she would? And are you a method actor, or what kind of actor are you? And did you work together that way?
I think everyone has their methods. To what degree are you going to take that method in the sense of how much you're going to immerse yourself in getting into that character? We talked quite a bit beforehand, before we left to Paris, about the relationship and what we had done. So to give each other enough, give each other ideas of who we were before. And then when we flew over there, we read the script, and then we kind of went into what we would do. We had some very in-depth conversations of who we were going to be and how we were going to do it as actors, and the tremendous amount of trust that we needed between each other to do this role. I mean, it's a very intimate role, and you have to be able to understand each other as performers and really, really trust each other. And that's something that we both understood from the very beginning.
Right. Okay. Cheryl, what is it that you were me and you were going on like
that's okay. I know,
very interesting.
I know.
So we didn't want to be disturbed here, but we got to, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I have I'm gonna say this right, Emanuele via Skype from Brazil. And
right.
Emanuele, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go for it. You're on the air with Mark and Kubi.
Hi everyone. By the way, thank you, Cheryl. I have asked about 5 of my questions. Thankfully, I have, like, them here.
You're scratching them off as we're asking?
Yeah. So, first thing about the encounter in the stairs, congratulations, Mark. Amazing stuff. Usually we see things like this in movies, and they put something so far from the reality, and people are so comfortable. In this movie, we don't see that. And that was just amazing acting from both of you.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, that was the first scene we did together. That was actually the first acting scene that Donna and I did. That was second day we were in Paris. So it was a difficult scene, but it was one that I think we did well.
Yeah, you nailed it. So I asked you this before, but I didn't get a full answer, so I'm going to ask you again.
Well, okay.
That's fine.
I have employed characters in Twitter, so we don't get the full answer.
Yeah.
I asked you about a chance of a book for this movie, and you said maybe. And
yeah.
I was wondering who is going to write it, and if it
is
going
to. Yeah, the book would be that we've been messing around with it would be comprised of the script, photos that Eve took. Probably some journal entries that Donna had. So it'd be a combination, kind of like a collage of everything that took place and that we did for Lovers Only. Things that we didn't quite see, some of the stuff, some of the scenes of the way they were written, and so you can see the way they were shot were a little bit different. Stuff like that. It would be more of a compilation of things that I think would interest people, less about writing about them, you know, or before they met or after they met. In fact, that would probably be more of a production-type feel book.
Okay, then. That kind of pulls my next question. It's real quick. usually in movies, there are changes in the script, and I was wondering if Stana had any participation in that.
And changes? No,
yeah.
Because she got the script on the way over there. The pair. She didn't have much time to change it.
on the road,
no.
Man.
Yeah, right on the road. We talked about it quite a bit. There was a little bit of changes. I mean, she had a lot of input in the sense of what we felt the scene could play or where it was going to play within the scene or where we were going to do it or how we were going to do it within the scene or walking or she would say, hey, I feel like Sophia would do that, and we'd film that. Or we would do that. But in the sense of the structure of the script, we stuck to that and added stuff on top of it. But we always had the through line of the movie. We never went off or changed the original structure of the script. We wanted that was our roadmap, and we were going to stick to it because we knew at a certain point we'd be really exhausted, and that we knew that if we stuck to it, that we would have a movie. We were 16 hours a day running, traveling, doing everything so fast that we could always go back to the page to know where we stood as characters and as the storytelling and as the direction. So not too much has changed from that. I mean, we added
Mark,
a lot of stuff on that. Go ahead.
Did Stana pick her own wardrobe, or how'd you guys do that with the crew? You didn't have did you use your own wardrobe?
I beat you
to
that
one. What we did was the person who had done our previous work, Bick Owen, she packed and designed our wardrobe and packed our suitcases as the two characters. And then we took the two suitcases over there and pulled from them accordingly.
Ah,
so
that's very good.
Yeah, so Eve had his whole wardrobe out from black to white, or the creams. She had the same. And then it was our responsibility to be able to know when we were shooting that scene what we were wearing. We'd wear the show up and wear the same thing, and we pretty much look at each other and go, oh, you like that, you not like that, or, you know, to kind of alter what we needed. But we pretty much stayed in a color coordination all the way through, knowing, hey, you can't wear any kind of color. And this scene, you know, we were going to a white wardrobe, a complete cream wardrobe. So we were pretty much, I mean, it was great to have that responsibility. As an actor, you usually have three people, you know, swarming around you, putting that stuff on you and changing and flipping your collars. And so it made you feel like, hey, I'm going to get up as a character, I'm going to put his clothes on, and I'm going to, it's my responsibility to make sure he looks good and does the things that needs to get done. And she had the same thing. So.
Great. Now, do you have any more questions there in Brazil?
No. Just the girls.
That's it? You did very good. You were worried about calling in. I'm glad you did it. I'm glad
you
made the plunge.
Yeah, I lost about six questions. You beat me to it.
Well, and also, Kubi, I read all night because you were our guest last minute, which we love, and I didn't have a lot of information, so I researched you all night. And you said that you did not get to go visit the shoot that you wanted to, but the movie was done by the time you came in on it. Is that right?
Yeah. I sort of knew they were doing something in France, but then I really didn't know what was going on until they were back. It would not have been practical to visit the shoot since they were, you know, five people
traveling along,
crossing France in lightning speed. But of course, it would have been nice.
So
did you
see the movie dailies to know how to write for Sophia and Eve, or was that already done with you and Mark ahead of time before you even filmed?
No.
Did you have the music?
I got involved when they were already into editing. There was a sort of a rough cut in place, and that's when I came on. So I started to see the film as it was taking shape in the edit room, and you know, sat down with Mark and Mike and talked about everything. But it was really mostly about watching the film and getting the story told literally by the movie.
Very good. Now, did you like write for, you know, there's parts in the movie where, you know, of course the background music and all that. So you had your ideas on that, but did you write a specific song just for Eve or just for Sophia when they were breaking up and going their separate ways? Was that something you took special care with, or
the entire score with almost, except for the restaurant scene where the music is sort of in the background of the restaurant, every single piece is based on the same melody, and it's the lover's theme.
Right.
So we decided very early on that we didn't want to separate them, that the music was always going to be about them together. And so literally everything, including things that don't quite sound alike, if you really follow the melody and listen to the melody, for instance, you know, from the end title or the kiss scene or the walk after the talk with the carpenter, it's all based on the exact same melody. And so it's just like the film takes all 90 minutes to sort of look at this relationship from many different angles, the music takes this one theme and follows these different angles, but always looking at the exact same thing, if that makes any sense.
Yes, yes it does. Cheryl, do you have anything for either guys? Is she there? Well, while she's in the room, she's in the private room talking to the callers. Mark, I'd like to ask you about the jump scene. Where Sophia and Eve jumps off of the cliff. Now, in doing this, is this a famous spot where people in France jump off? Did you just drive along and say, here's a good place? I mean, did you guys check out the depth of the water? And the
No. All that is no, and it was it's cut between two different two different jump points. One of them is a popular, it wasn't Lover's Leap, but it was a popular jumping point in outside of Saint-Tropez going on the way to Nice, which was pretty terrifying. It's the first one he's explaining to her, and they tell her to look over the edge, and she sees that rock. I mean, that was far. Actually, Mike went down there and swam and came back and said, I don't think it's a good idea to jump at this particular leap. So what we did was we went over the top of the mountain and found a little shorter jump, but it was equally as far in the sense, and it was nervous. She'd never done that before. She'd never jumped off anything like that before. So, and our whole point.
And she better never do it again.
Oh my God! I mean,
her lawyers are like, "What?"
I'm not her mother, but
she shopped my heart.
Her
let me
family,
tell you.
Not only that, but
her life insurance paid up.
Yeah.
How about you,
Mark?
Your hair stayed up? Did you pop a few gray hairs there, Mark?
Yeah.
Oh my God! No, the point was, you know,
guy scared me to death.
Yeah, it was terrifying. I mean, it was a far jump, and we hit the water pretty hard.
Hard.
The whole thing. Yeah, we hit the whole idea was to make sure we held hands all the way down.
So you die together if it went bad.
Yeah,
and you had all that clothes
exactly.
on to drag you under too.
Yeah,
the heavy clothes. I thought you'd never get on those rocks.
Yes, at a certain point, you just a movie making you stop thinking. I'm just going to put that out there.
Well, let me bring Amy on. She's been waiting patiently from Canada.
Oh, Amy, here we go.
Amy, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, go for
Thank
it. You're
you,
on
Amy.
The air with Mark and
Uber.
Tubi.
Hi,
Tubi,
everyone.
I said Uber.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to say, first of all, really congratulations. The movie is so stunning, like truly. I just got to watch it today being in Canada, and I'm still sort of kind of processing and everything. Yeah, I wanted to ask, you've spoken a lot sort of in the past and sort of I've read a few interviews with you about sort of being constantly in character, like almost 24/7 and sort of living in the moment with Stana, even when the cameras weren't rolling.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know, like, what does that feel like? I mean, for me, I'm an actor. I just graduated from school, and to me it sounds so fascinating. Like, what goes on through your head? What, you know, how do you feel?
Well, it was. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was a very taxing, not only performance in the sense that the character, and we both were exhausted. Mm. I mean, we went through these two characters, very intimate scenes. You're with it. You're in each other's space, private space, for a long time, and so you know, it is it's a very, very difficult role. I mean, it was probably one of the most difficult things to get into and get out of. To understand. I mean, everyone's really responding to intimacy, and I think it was an achievement to us, and that's something that we spoke about prior to doing the roles, is that we need to really get that believability. We really, you know, as I say, and it's been quoted many times, is we didn't want to fall in love. We were in love, and we wanted to know what it felt like to be in love with each other, and those were the moments that the very, very special tender moments of just playing with each other's hair, doing the little things of, you know, her touching my lips, doing the things that become subconscious in a relationship and being conscious about it. So those are the things that we really wanted to get into as the two characters and really wanted to, you know, as a writer, I felt, look, I don't want to write a movie about falling in love because the audience is falling in love with them already. So why you have that double idea of like, these people are falling in love and we're falling in love. How about you have two people being in love and have the audience fall in love with them? And so that was the kind of the idea behind let's get the state of being. And, you know, and you run that risk of, is it going to be self-indulgent? Is it going to be boring? Is it going to be watching John Lennon and Yoko Ono for the whole time? Are you going to be repelled by this thing? You know, so you're running that risk. And that was the thing that me and Donna really wanted to convey was, hey, there's an attractiveness to being in love, because you know that montage of shopping and falling in love, I'm not that big a fan of that, and I wanted to avoid the falling in love bit. And so, you know, we hope to achieve that.
Yeah, no, you did. Most definitely. I imagine, does at any time during that process a sort of reality kind of get blurred? I mean, I'm not saying, like, are you and Stana an item now? I just mean, like...
No.
Did you ever, like, blink for a second, like, oh, my God, am I actually falling for this person?
Of course.
Really?
You're gonna have those feelings, because you're going there for 24 hours a day. You're going into that area where you're going, you have these kind of feelings. But it's not. I don't think it's the kind of... feelings that you have when you, you know, with your loved one, your wife, or with that kind of thing. It's, look, I care about this person because she's doing the things necessary to achieve this role. You know, I didn't know her from anybody. She didn't know me from anybody. And, you know, you're walking through Paris holding hands, kissing each other. You're doing these things that kind of you would do with a loved one anyway. So, you know, it's more, I think it was more out of blurring the lines of, wow, this person cares about me because they're doing what is necessary for the believability of the characters. And that, and that's where you get that tremendous amount of trust and respect for each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah. No, that's it. I'm done.
Well, thank you for calling in, Amy, from Canada.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
No problem.
Next up, what I'd like to do is go to some folks that have been waiting patiently on Skype. The first one up, let me bring her up here, is, let's see if they don't get scared. Sometimes on Skype they get a little nervous. This is Jane, so let me see if I can connect to her. One moment here.
You have her? Well, while we're waiting for...
I put myself on mute, Pam, for a little bit because we're having a horrific thunderstorm.
Okay. Thunder, lightning. Well, while you're waiting for Jane, I'll ask for Angela in Franklin, Tennessee. She wants to know from Mark, what is the meaning of Sophia buying Eve's daughter the dress? To remind him of what he left back home, or to let him know that she accepted his daughter since she loves him? Or is it one of those things that we are left up to decide for ourselves as the audience?
Oh. Well, I think it's all three in a sense. But from my point of view, it's her showing her sacrifice in the sense that she's giving up. It's grace to me, what I call grace. She's showing the grace to say, I am not going to interrupt this young girl's life, take her father away, or destroy her life for my selfishness. And that's what that kind of gift is to him. It's like, I understand who this person is in your life. That's what's important. This is what we need to focus on, this. And so it's kind of like, here's a gift for that. It is an acceptance, and it is a sacrifice. And it's the ultimate, to me, it's the ultimate statement of love is sacrifice. And she has the grace to recognize that and say, here, this is what I'm giving to your daughter.
Aww. Well, next up, we do have Jane. From who is Castle fan always. Jane, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
Hi, Jane.
Hello. Hi, Pam. Hi, Cheryl. Hi, Mark.
Hi,
Lindsay.
Are you?
Hello.
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you
for
taking your time to talking to us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Did you have that glass of whiskey before you called in? She was going to take a swig of whiskey.
I had a bit of a beer.
Okay.
If that helps. First of all, I would like to say, Mark, I really like your interpretation of love presented in For Lovers Only.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I may sound like I'm reading from a newspaper because I am reading.
That's fine.
The connectedness and the sensitivity and sensuality and all these qualities presented in the film, I really like it. I've never seen anything like this in any other film. Like you said, being in love, falling in love, you see it everywhere, in every movie. But being in love and what it is like, you don't see that perspective a lot.
Yes.
So I really like that.
Thank you very much. I mean, it was a risk. You know, it's a risk because you don't know if there's a narrative in there at all. So you want to be able to make sure that there's some kind of entertainment value in watching people being rather than falling, which is more of an action.
Yeah, watching your film make me think a lot. And I have to say that makes my love life so dull.
Oh, yeah.
Mine too.
I'll
be waking up in the middle of the night and thinking about it. So is this kind of reaction you expected from the audience?
No, it's something, you know, as you know, and I use this word mildly, as an artist, you you sit down and you go, okay, I want to communicate a certain idea or a feeling, and I want the people, the viewers to feel what I'm trying to communicate. And, you know, I'm a I envy music a lot. I love music, and I always think that, you know, the way music is can get to somebody and straight to their heart is so much faster than a movie, because we're dealing with such a visual.
Hello.
With such a big,
hello.
Just a second.
Sorry, I dropped out.
It's okay.
Oh, that's all right. So, you know, you want to communicate that. And so what you do is you know, as I call music, is that, you know, they're dealing with vibrations and we're dealing with a visual element. So we're kind of cheated in that sense that, you know, I wish I could do that. And that's where Kubi's score actually came in and really helped me convey the emotion that I needed to convey.
Hello.
She keeps dropping
scale.
Out, Cheryl.
Hello?
Hello.
I'll connect to you later, okay? Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Cheryl, because Mark couldn't finish answering his question.
Oh, that's
but,
right. So, you know, to cut all that off, did I expect this? No, not at all. I mean, I did not expect this. I did not respect this type of reaction at all. I mean, you'd like that this was communicated the way it has been and people have been touched, but not at all. I didn't expect people would be touched this profoundly by